SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, SteveBeck.com. And here on the, I guess, the brink of a spate of winter weather. Snow expected. It's hard to tell if it's going to affect anything on the eastern seaboard racing-wise. We'll play that one by ear. It looks like later Saturday afternoon and into Saturday, I think, if anything is going to impact the East Coast, it might not be, at least New York, probably maybe till Sunday. I don't know. We'll see. We'll keep an eye. And of course, also excited, had been, we keep talking. You heard Steve Haskin, although I apologize that we got cut off at the bottom of the hour yesterday. In hour three, the Comcast had a widespread Broward County issue in Florida, knocked Casey in the studio out. So sorry about that last half hour. But we got plenty in with Steve Haskin about the LeCompte, although Steve joins many on the prognostication front that are looking at that race on Saturday and are a little bit cross-eyed about it. I don't blame anybody either. There's just, it's one of those races where you don't, I gave you the morning lines, you don't want to just automatically accept the obvious candidates, knowing that, a field that size, things could be squirrely. So, meanwhile, for those that are watching, the rain that's expected in New Orleans on Saturday, mostly the morning hours, and then tapering off into the afternoon, but it does feel like there will be moisture. It doesn't look like it's going to be possible to just skirt that rain. They're calling the percentages 90% Saturday. They're going to get some today too, a little bit. We'll see. And of course, we have that race that came up as part of the discussion of the LeCompte with the three-year-olds, with that group that goes later today, 2:23 Central, the fifth race at the fairgrounds. And Gunnett, Cornaccia, Frolic Moore, Owendale. I mean, this is a good and important group that will exit this event and look to the Risen Star February 16th. We'll be there for the Risen Star, and looking forward, especially the way things have shaped up there in New Orleans. But all right, let's hope the weather does not render these results indecipherable. There's nothing you can do. So the rest of the card too. You got grass races. You've got maiden races Saturday fairgrounds. This card is more or less a duplicate of the one from December 22nd that was a lot of fun to follow. The racing, to be honest, the racing at fairgrounds at this, through this Saturday, has been really the best. I think the depth of the three-year-olds in particular, has been better here than anywhere. And, of course, with Oaklawn starting next week, they'll do their own run through the Arkansas Derby, but if you haven't been following Fairgrounds, they've had weather's been, you know, through December, and it's been a little tricky, and that's not unusual down there, but the racing's really been good. So I look forward to Marcus Hirsch's thoughts. Also starting to look ahead to everything else on the weekend. You got the Palos Verdes at Santa Anita, and tomorrow we'll talk to Tom Quigley and Jay Bridman. We'll get Jay's LeCompte view and then some West Coast. But the Palos Verdes, kind of nice the way at least the start here of the sprint season for the older group is going to come together. So lots to look forward to. You've also got, speaking of sprinting, Toboggan. Andy Serling today. I haven't actually set a time for Andy. I would say either 10 or 10:30 or somewhere in that vicinity, because with Steve Haskin having visited yesterday, we got that opening. But the Toboggan in New York, and talking about Palos Verdes, and I'm just going back to give you the I don't know what happened to him. What happened to, there it is. There we go. I dig through this. I there's so much paper on my desk. Yeah, it's insane. The the big name, of course, is the return of Roy H. from the sprint win, Breeders' Cup, and fold in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship before that. And he's carrying a win streak now as a 7-year-old. And basically everything will be a lead up toward a potential third straight Breeders' Cup sprint. That would be... it'd be unprecedented, right? So, Roy H. headlining the Palos Verdes, but Peter Miller moves Conquest Tsunami over from the turf, and hasn't been on a main track. I mean, going back at least 2 years. Yeah, I mean, he is not. He was in an off the turf at Woodbine, but that put him on the synthetic. In his PPs, you don't even see his last dirt race. St. Joe Bay, coming out of a December win at Los Al. Good old St. Joe Bay makes his 7-year-old debut. Kentucky, the very nice Kentucky, last seen in the Malibu. Before that, had won the Las Barrera. And one of last year's solid 3-year-olds, of course, had won the San Vicente. So, multiple graded stake winner, Kentucky, back for his 4-year-old debut. It's a good group. Distinctive B, too, from Peter Miller. Actually, his third start since the Breeders' Cup. He's had a couple of decent efforts in an allowance company. One at Del Mar on the turf, and then at Los Al in a money allowance. So, touched by autism, too, I want to slip in. Johnny Tabota, who we haven't talked to in a long time, but Johnny's longstanding tribute and awareness campaign for autism that his horses always include. Marcia Stortz, training touched by autism. Who's nice? He's won 8 times. He's kind of an allowance horse, but it's good to have him in this spot. And always kind of root for Johnny. I haven't talked to him in a long time. We should reach out. Plenty of news around the Pegasus workouts and so forth. And the Pegasus Turf continues to add horses. We'll get to that. Marty McGee tomorrow. I think up now to 9 horses. They still are beating the bushes. And entries are Tuesday. So what do we got? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Got about 4 or 5 days to fill out that field. I did see where the Japanese horse arrived last night, Aerolith. We'll get this portion of news in. We are going to visit after the first break to discuss the passing of as lovely a person as any of us have come across on the media end, certainly. And news came, I guess, late yesterday. I saw it in the early evening, that Phyllis Wyeth, the owner and breeder of Union Rags, had passed at 78. And the success of Union Rags is one of those stories that, you know, at the time, you know, you think back to his 2-year-old campaign and the champagne, and then, you know, the frequent troubled trips. He was one of those horses that tried the patience of his backers and his fans, but it all came together when he won the Belmont Stakes and had the opportunity along the way, you know, to talk many times with Mrs. Wyeth. And I particularly remember the party, the trainer's dinner for Union Rags for that Derby. And I think I'm pretty sure that was really the first time I had a chance to spend, you know, more than just a passing, you know, greeting with Mrs. Wyeth. And she was not just a lovely person to encounter socially. She was a bit of a force of nature and a charismatic and powerful presence, and the courage involved with her, you know, having her mobility taken from her at a young age. I think her early 20s when the car accident left her paralyzed from the waist down. And I don't think we'll hear from Russell Jones, her longtime friend and bloodstock advisor that helped her craft Union Rags. Russell's going to join us after this break. He himself, a remarkable, it's a remarkable story, and an individual. But I don't think missed anything in her life by virtue of you know, having had you know, to spend, you know, the majority, you know, 50 plus years in a wheelchair. It didn't stop her from anything she wanted to accomplish. And the pleasure that she took in the achievements of Union Rags, we'll let Russell Jones and Mike Matz, we'll let them talk about it. We'll come back with Russell Jones after the break. He himself, in fact, is going riding. I had a conversation with him already this morning, Mr. Jones, and he's got to be 80. I said, can we get you on the show? Well, when? I said, well, I could probably get you on early. And so, well, good, because I said, I'm heading out riding, and it's got to be 20 degrees. And he said, I want to get out before the snow. I was tickled by that. It was great. He'll the breeding portion that is involved here, and her Mrs. Wyeth's parents, which figures in a great deal about how she came to reacquire Union Rags. Because if you don't, you may not recall, she had sold Union Rags as a yearling at Saratoga, for nice money. But then, as a two-year-old in training, came back and reacquired. She didn't want to let go because Union Rags, it was really a product of her family's longstanding involvement in the game. And Russell Jones himself, the decision to go to Dixie Union. Not once, but twice, because there was an older brother who was a pretty good horse. But he was no Union Rags. And also the fact that Union Rags was the last foal out of the mare, out of Tempo. This was the last shot. And she wanted a filly, because she wanted a filly so that she could go on with the family. So she was initially disappointed, but it was a great, great story. And then we'll after Russell joins us, we'll talk to Michael Matz. So later, Neil Howard. I promised you Neil Howard, and we want Neil to give everybody an update on the situation with Roddy McKenzie. The exercise rider who was badly injured with that head-on collision a week ago, Monday at Fairgrounds. And much, much more. Rich Yang later. And we'll see. Maybe we can get Seth in, because, of course, yesterday we lost Seth. And we got some of those results from yesterday, those races that we kind of were looking toward. Take a break here. Russell Jones joins us first to pay tribute to the late Phyllis Wyeth. At the Races, Thursday. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah, Express Bet. Give me 12 grand to win on the 9 at Gulfstream. Yeah, yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey, hang up the phone. You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus Big Bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better than ever. All you gotta do is register for free at ExpressBet.com. Then you'll earn entries for every bet you make until January 14th. The more you play, the more chances you have to win.
And you win a $12,000 bet on the Pegasus?
And a VIP trip to Gulfstream with airfare, hotel, tickets, it's all included. Now if you'll excuse me, I got some more practicing to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, ExpressBet, you still there? Good. Like I was saying,
ExpressBet is the official online wagering partner of the Pegasus World Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to bet today. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 388-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Your feet in the air. Try this trick and spin it, yeah. Your head will collapse, there's nothing in it. And you ask yourself, where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind?
We're back at the races. 20 minutes into hour one on this Thursday, and as I mentioned before the break, word came late yesterday afternoon that Phyllis Wyeth had passed at 78. Husband Andrew and the family at hand, and her life was remarkable. And for most of her life, her friend Russell Jones, who was also the bloodstock advisor that helped craft generations of Wyeth runners, including Union Rags and Russell Jones, a legendary individual in equine sport himself, joins us. And Russell, for the entire industry and fans and horse players and stakeholders, express our real sorrow at the passing of Mrs. Wyeth.
It's a great loss for all of us that knew her, and it's a great loss for the industry in general, because she was a significant player and a great person.
And you were friendly with her from teenage years?
Just about. I knew her before she got hurt, and I think she was 20 when she got hurt. So I've known her for quite a while. We've been great friends, and it is a real loss. And it's a particularly tough loss for Jamie, her husband, who has, in the last 30 to 60 days have been very difficult, because she's been sleeping and then awake and not able to have meaningful conversations very often. And so he's really lived with it, and his mother is also in terrible health. And so between the two of them, it's been a very tough time for him. God knows what his paintings must be looking like during this time.
I'm sorry to hear that, too, because they were such a fun presence. And so tickled, Russell, to be on the classic trail. And of course, as a 2 year old, and as it was so obvious that Union Rags was a major talent and was going to be an important horse in the crop, and they were just tickled. Whenever you'd see them at the track, they were just so happy that you know it was happening.
Phyllis really couldn't believe it as it was going on. I mean, she was always so pleased, but startled at the same time at how well it was going. I mean, she never expected, she dreamed she might have such a horse, but she never really expected that he was going to do what he did.
You were a big part of it, obviously, and what always seems for fans and observers, what feels like something that is immediate, in fact, had what 40, 50 years really in the making.
Well, she was continuing on the work that her parents had begun, and she felt a sort of a obligation to their work to make sure it got continued and got continued at a high level, and she made every effort to do that. And to have Union Rags win the champagne as a 2-year-old, well, she cried for 3 minutes probably before she could say anything. It just overwhelmed her. And then to go on to win the Belmont the next year, these were things that even her parents dreamed about, but didn't experience. Phyllis experienced the ultimate, and she never believed that she had created this. She always believed what good luck it was.
And good luck figures in as well in a couple of different places, because from a business standpoint, as a yearling, he ended up going through the ring at Saratoga. And then talk about what transpired between then and the 2-year-old in training sale, where you guys reacquired. She wasn't going to let him go without keeping tabs.
Well, you know, it goes back to Tempo. Which was a mare that she inherited from her parents. And Tempo was reaching the limits of her life, and she'd had a pretty decent colt by Union Rag, by Dixie Union earlier, and then she was getting harder and harder to deliver her foals, and there was discussion back and forth of whether we were going to breed her one more time, and Phyllis said, we're going to do it. And she picked out Dixie Union, which at that point was a $50,000 stud fee, and she said, this is what I want to do, and I know that there's more risk in this than ever, but this is what I want to do. And when the foal was born in Kentucky at my niece's farm, Braxton Lynch, her husband said, Phyllis, you got it. This is the one. And she was very happy with the horse. When he came out of the ring at Saratoga at 145, I think it was, she was saying, well, that's not a bad return on the stud fee. And at that point, she seemed to be satisfied. It gnawed away at her after that. And when that horse turned up in Eddie Wood's consignment at the sale in Florida, 2-year-old in training sale in Florida, I was there and looked at the horse and said, you know, Phyllis, he's really changed a lot since he was a yearling. This is a serious, serious horse. Did things so easily in his work. And anyway, she said, I got to have him. And it was a freaky kind of a thing where I said, well, he's going to cost a lot more than you sold him for. And she said, well, how much more? And I said, he's going to be $350, $375, maybe as much as $400. And she picked one number. She said, have me on the telephone, but $390 is my tops. And the bidding went along, and it was pretty active, and it was, I don't know what the reserve was that the boys had on him, but I think we all passed that. It was probably in the 200 somewhere. The bidding went on and on and on, and I hadn't made my first bid, and I finally made a bid. I was standing behind the auction stand at 390, and it was so freaky because she had only picked out one number. That was the only time I bid that number, and she bought the horse. And I mean, it was almost like, you know, this horse is supposed to come home to Phyllis. And, it turned out to be a dream come true. And she got her horse back, and he has repaid her in dividends on the racetrack, and now as a stallion, he's doing a tremendous job as a stallion. So she's watching us carefully to make sure we don't mess it up now, but she has been rewarded many times.
Well, and we were all rewarded by, you know, by her presence. And, you know, as a person, aside from what we got to see as an owner, she was a generous benefactor and philanthropist and an advocate for mobility issues. If you talk about her as a person and the 50 years that, you know, you had the pleasure of dealing with her.
She was a treat. She was certainly one of my best friends through the whole time. And wonderful to do business with. I mean, she had a very strong idea of what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And she was not bashful about expressing it. But at the same time, she was extremely generous. When the time came for her to be generous, she was always there. Not foolish, but generous. And she was predictable in that she wouldn't let anybody around her do anything too foolish either. And she did have those inspirational moments where she said, I think this is what we should do. And sometimes it was defying logic, but we all came to respect those decisions because even though the success of those decisions may not have been apparent when they were made, the result made you pay attention to the decisions she was making because she was more often right. It was a fun, she was just a wonderful person to be with. And I think people that were around her found that she created excitement wherever she went. Whoever was in association with her, because there was always something exciting going on in her life. She was just a treat to be around, that's all.
And charismatic, and there was a, you know, there was a real, you know, there was a real glow around her. I think about the, you know, the 3-4 times I had the pleasure, and a real testimony. We're going to talk to Michael Matz next, Russell, about you know his. You know, his feeling and his experience and what went on with Rags as a racehorse. But, you know, for you too, the patience that's involved in bloodstock work and in, you know, the attempts to craft successes in the breeding shed. This was also a kind of a crowning achievement for you as well.
Well, I would love to be able to take the credit, but I give most of the credit to Phyllis because she was intuitive to a fault, and it was I give her more credit by far than I give myself. She did have a unique way she communicated with horses, because in that little machine, that scooter of hers, you know, most people would have said, oh my God, don't go so close to the horses. And she'd roll right out to them. And there, we have some pictures somewhere of Union Rags in training, putting his head down in the basket in the front of the scooter, and she's petting his head. Now, I don't think if anybody else had been in that scooter, he would allow them to do that. But there was a communication the two of them had, which was quite unique. That, and look at the pictures after the Belmont.
Yeah.
She's there right up to him in the winner's circle, puts her hand out, he puts his head down, she puts her hand right on his nose. Here's a horse that's just won a mile and a half race, a classic, and he's in the winner's circle allowing her to do that. That was a very unique part.
Well, I had to...
Anyway, it was a fun ride. And yeah. It will be a once-in-a-lifetime ride for me. And I am thrilled that I was allowed to be part of it.
Well, I'm delighted, even under these circumstances, to have you on, and I really should get you back too. We could talk about Mr. Kluge and Unaccounted For, and your success over the Timbers.
About ancient history now.
All history is ancient, I guess, but in racing it lives forever, and I'm really pleased, Russell, that we were able to reach you today. And. And I know you're going out riding this morning, I guess, right? Despite the temperature?
As I get off.
I love it. I love it.
It's chilly, but it's going to be a good day, so I'm ready.
Well, thank you so much. You know, the opportunity to have Russell join us and pay tribute to the late Phyllis Wyeth, who is going to be so warmly remembered and so widely missed. Russell, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. Russell Jones, and of course, he himself, Walnut Green, and I mentioned Unaccounted for John Kluge, Morven Stud, and he himself, a chase and timber rider, and a fascinating equine sport character in his own right, Russell Jones. Let's take a break, and when we come back, going to be joined by Michael Matz, and we talked with Michael all throughout the career of Union Rags, and it's just vital that he join us too this morning to talk about Mrs. Wyeth. Back after this.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Riding off my thoughts of old, walking down these streets of gold.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes to the top of the hour, and it, as I always have to say, even under the circumstances, a pleasure to have Russell Jones join us to talk about the backstory when it came to breeding Union Rags and his long friendship and professional association with Mrs. Wyeth, and for Michael Matz as well. A very sad morning lose a client, and of course that the kind of people the Wyeths are, they're friends and equestrians. And Michael, as I said to Russell Jones, for the entire industry, just saddened by this news. Michael.
Yes, hello.
Hey, there we are. Michael Matz joins us. And Michael, I just had Russell Jones, and he talked about, his long friendship with Mrs. Wyeth and the backstory of Union Rags. And once he was delivered to you, you made it a very special run for everybody that became a fan of Union Rags or just watched along. So sad to hear the news last night of the passing of Phyllis Wyeth.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. She's like I said, she was a very strong lady, and amazing she did the things that she's done.
Your association with the Chatsford team, how did that come about?
Well, we've known Phyllis for a long time. She knew my wife's family quite well, and her family and my wife's family were friends, and like I say, they've known them for quite a while, and I've always had a couple horses for Phyllis now and then, but she always would spread them out with different trainers, and I was lucky enough to get Union Rags.
And of course, we just heard the some of the backstory, and I just remembered from the time the wholesale saga of him going through the ring at Saratoga as a yearling, and people may not recall that it was IEAH that had bought him as a yearling, and then Eddie Woods developed him toward the 2-year-old in training sale. Were you involved? Were you helping pick horses out at the time? Or
no, I was not involved with that at all. Actually, first time I saw Union Rags was as a yearling, and I looked at Phyllis's yearling at Saratoga, and he was a big, immature yearling, and he was just a little lanky and immature, and that, like I say, I probably would have sold for more money, except I say he was immature, and but he had a very nice frame to him, and then it went from there.
And, of course, he ends up coming to you. When I know the debut took place at Delaware, the maiden win. How long had you had him before you put him in a race?
Well, he went to the two-year-old in training sale, and Russell bought the horse for Phyllis, bought it back for him, and then he just came up to me and handed the ticket and said, you know, you've got another two-year-old, and Phyllis wanted you to have this horse, and, you know, she never said a word to me that she was buying it or anything. That's a little bit, Phyllis kind of did what she wanted to do, and this is how it went, and then we gave the horse a little time and sent it back up to Eddie Woods just to be turned out, and then, I believe we must have gotten the horse in April sometimes. I think we gave him 30 days off. I don't remember the exact time, but we gave him some time off, and then we got him back up there, and he didn't lose very much, and he was working 5/8, you know, up to working 5/8, and I saw a race at Delaware, and I said, you know, I know he's really not a sprinter, that's not his deal, but why don't we just give him a race and just see where he is and go on from there. I mean, a race would be much more to his advantage than, you know, five more works. So that's what we did, and, he ran real well in that race, and then we just went on forward from there.
From the maiden win, goes to the Saratoga Special mid-meet and wins the special and wins. I mean, he just romped in there. That even had to be a little surprising. You also dealt with a wet track that day too.
Yeah, we were contemplating scratching him, and it ended up that we took him out on the track that morning, and he seemed to really relish the track, so we said, you know, and Dixie Unions usually went on that you could do a sloppy surface, so we said, let's give it a whirl. He did run a little green in the race, but it was, we all got soaking wet, and Phyllis was soaked also, but we were enjoying the moment, so it didn't matter.
From there, you wait for the champagne, and he just was dominant and beat some good horses that day, including Alpha, but he won off by a half a dozen lengths or more.
Yeah, I mean, that, and we knew the more we were going to stretch him out, the better he was going to be. And it just, I don't know if he just, some of the greenness came out in the Breeders' Cup, but it was sort of a shame because you know, I think another jump, and he would have had those horses, but I think he just was a little bit, you know, with the big crowd and everything like that, he just didn't pick up where he should have picked up right away, and, you know, he lost by, you know, a head. So that was sort of disappointing, but racing's racing. What are you going to do?
There were basically a couple of disappointments on that front when it came to, you know, to his career and the juvenile. He loses a head to Hanson. You start the 3-year-old year and you didn't basically waste any time. He started in the Fountain of Youth. That was the way you chose to begin the year, and you know, things started certainly the right way.
Well, we sort of made a plan a little bit. We didn't want to do too many races before the Kentucky Derby because that was our plan. But you know, things just didn't. I was trying to get. First of all, I tried to get John Velasquez to ride, but he wouldn't give me a 3-race commitment. And we wanted 2 races and the Derby because he could ride him in, I think, 1 of them or 2 of them, but he couldn't ride him in all 3. And we were trying to find somebody that could ride him all 3. And Julian gave us that commitment. So I just thought it was better to have somebody that was, you know, and, you know, it just didn't, got him in a little bit of trouble at the, in the Florida Derby, which was unfortunate in a small field. And then we got into trouble at the Derby. So it was one of those things, and you know, then we were able to get it, and it would have worked out that we would have, something happened with the horse that Johnny was going to ride, and we would have been able to get him for all three, but you know, we have already made the commitment, so there wasn't much we could do about it.
Well, and that, you know, the Florida Derby, Take Charge Indy, wins there, and you know, that was a disappointment because he went off at 2-5, and the expectation, and I remember, you know, how frustrating and shocking it was. And then in the Derby, he finished 7th. This, of course, is I'll Have Another's upset win. Bodie Meister, you know, looked a winner at one point. And, Michael, I could probably go back to the our audio and find our conversation after Belmont. It was such a special circumstance. But, you know, there was real frustration and disappointment after the Derby. And, you know, the question started to rise, you know, is he going to get the kind of win that, you know, that would help propel him toward, you know, what is now already a great stallion career. But bring us back to those 5 weeks between Derby and Belmont.
Well, I mean, you're right. The Derby was a very disappointing. I thought, you know, we had a real good horse for the mile and a quarter. The only thing that made me nervous was our start position, and I did tell Julian, I said, the one thing you got to do is you got to break in the Derby. You can't get shuffled back from the start, because if you do, you get, you know, it's just before I ran Barbara, I spoke with a lot of trainers, and everybody said that you've got to get a decent position, you know, going into the first turn, and you know, as much as that seems that for a mile and a quarter you won't want to rush your horse up there, but everybody sort of said you've got to establish your position, and that really just didn't happen to us. And then he got checked again in the backside, and considering where he was going down the backside to finish 7th, it was probably a, you know, credit to his ability that he even got up to be 7th. But you're absolutely right, it was disappointing with him and for everybody involved. And, you know, at that point, I didn't see any sense to running back 2 weeks in the Preakness, so we just sort of concentrated on the Belmont, and, you know, luckily we made the right choice.
You also, and again, no, not trying to heap on Julian Leperoux, but the opportunity to ride Johnny, you know, finally came together, and the combination of the, you know, the big wide racetrack with plenty of room to run, you know, you'd been in the four hole in Churchill, and in, you know, Belmont, you don't have to worry as much about, you know, where you're going to line up, and it was just, you know, it a very memorable and really an idyllic scenario for you guys in the Belmont.
You're absolutely, he ran a terrific race, and the Wyeth wanted to make a change after the Derby, but, you know, because we didn't have a commitment after that. So we were lucky enough to get Johnny, who I originally wanted, and he came down and worked the horse at Fair Hill, and he really liked him. And I think everybody that's ridden him really liked to ride him. I don't think that was the problem. But he did a real nice job, and I thought he, you know, couldn't have asked for a better ride.
You beat Painter in here, and this it ended up. I mean, we certainly didn't know at the time it was going to be his final start, as a suspensory issue derails him from that point. But it was such a that was such a delirious scene, and I guess it's easy to say that because, you know, after these kinds of wins, it's always happy. But I think everybody appreciated how important it was to Mrs. Wyeth, and it was impossible.
Yeah, she was really, you know, like I said, her family was in racing, and I feel bad that he didn't get a chance to show his, you know, what he would have been like as an older horse. A lot of, you know, some it was a very, very minor injury, but I think it was hard on Mrs. Wyeth, you know, sometimes with all the pressure of the racing and stuff like that, that she had, you know, her husband told me that, you know, it was just hard on her, the nerves and I guess things like that. So, you know, the best thing was to retire him.
Well, and what he, you know, what he's crafting as a stallion, the pleasure from that for you too. I mean, obviously not just for, you know, for what it meant to her. I mean, it's one of those things that when you have a horse like this, and then you get opportunity to train the sons and daughters, you get to relive it on a regular basis.
Sure. No. It's quite nice to have some offsprings of a horse like that.
Finally, Michael, you know, for horsemen, the opportunity to win important races and fulfill ambitions for people like Phyllis Wyeth. Speak to that, if you would.
I didn't hear you there, Steve.
For you and for horsemen in general, the opportunity to the wish fulfillment and you know the ambitions of someone like Phyllis Wyeth, who for her it was the culmination of her parents' dedication to the sport, and to make those kinds of aspirations happen, just speak to that a little.
Well, things change, as you know, from, you know, as families get bigger and different generations come around. But she was brought up where her family was involved with racing, and she always enjoyed it. And it wasn't just racing. She did other things also, you know, with the driving and riding.
All right.
And, to keep that go, you just don't find it that often these days. You'll get new people that come in sometimes, but the people that, you know, were involved with, generations before them, it's a nice tradition to carry forward.
Well, she'll be greatly missed, and Russell talked about how difficult this has been on Jamie, her husband, and I guess his mother is ill as well. So our thoughts are with
them.
I think
Jamie's going through a pretty tough time right now with Phyllis and his mother, and like I say, he's kind of a private person anyway. So it's just. I think it's probably, I guess the people that are real close to him are trying to do the best they can. And I think they're pretty private people. So, he knows if there's anything we can do, people will help him, that's for sure. But I think he likes to be pretty private.
Well, thoughts are with them, and the family. We'll have a private ceremony, and if there are people interested in donating in her memory, the family asks that the Brandywine River Museum of Art or the Farnsworth Art Museum be the beneficiary. And, Michael, I appreciate this, and thanks so much for taking the time to remember.
My pleasure.
Michael Matz and Union Rags that really culminated. I mean, she's had other horses. Chatsford has gone on, and Grand Motion has had some horses of late too for Mrs. Wyeth. But the Union Rags, you look at the pedigree and you go through the family. It goes back into the 60s. Glad Rags was the, maybe we'll get Sid next week. Maybe Sid could talk a little bit about how Union Rags came to be, because this goes back to, specifically to Glad Rags that won the 1,000 Guineas, 65, 66. And then from there, Terpsichorist, who then got Tempo. And Terpsichorist was, boy, she was old already when she got Union Rags' Dam. She was the daughter of Nijinsky. And 1975, so she was 17 when she got Tempo. And then Tempo, as Russell mentioned, was 17 when she got Union Rags. So really, that's a spread when you've got a Dam from the 90s, a Dam from the 70s, and then a Dam from the 60s. These days, you look at some pedigrees, you could have seven dams in that space between the 60s and now. That is amazing. And before that, the fourth dam, Dryad, who was by Panorama. Glad Rags herself was by Hi Hat. And Son of Hyperion. We've got, let Sid talk about the wonderful Union Rags. Dixie Union, of course, out of the Capote Mare, she's tops. And Dixie Union himself by Dixieland Band. And Union Point, just looking at this page, Union Rags is pretty well in, pretty heavily inbred, Northern Dancer and Mr. Prospector. Native Dancer, of course, as well, but yeah, we'll have Sid talk about it. And that that other son that was a full brother that doesn't get mentioned that often, G4 was his name. And he was a three-time winner and made $133,000. G4. He was gelded, too. He was 2004, so he was 5 years ahead of Union Rags. And there was actually a third sibling in between who was winless, named Durantis. Started just a couple of times, three times, hit the board once. Actually, no, he was not. Was he a, no, he was not a, I take that back, he was not a, no, just the two Dixie Unions. Okay, yeah, just the two Dixie Unions, G4 and Union Rags. Went to Cozine. Had a winner with Cozine named Sound of Fleet. And had a $100,000 winner, Tempo West, daughter of Rahi, as well. And that, in fact, Tempo West is a, Tempo West has got somebody, and I'm gonna keep digging here since we're in this. There you go, declaration of war. How about that? Now Sid's got double reason to talk about Tempo and what went on here. One of her daughters got declaration of war. Amazing, and also war correspondent. The full brother. She went, they took her five, they've taken her how many times? One, two, six times to Warfront. And have been largely successful. Although, interestingly, two fillies have been unproductive. She's had the most success with her males. Vertiformer, too, is a, he was actually Dynaformer. But six times that, and I guess she doesn't show anything past, so 2015, the presidency was her last, appears to be her last, Tempo West last fall. Interesting. All right, we got a topic for, there's a topic for Sid. I love it. Let's take a break. Top of the hour here, and I was not going to let the passing of Mrs. Wyeth go without a visit. We've got Andy Serling and Tony to get to, and one of the things I got to talk about with Tony, I didn't get to it yesterday. I don't know if you saw the piece by Dan Ross at thoroughbredracing.com. Dan, who does such good work, West Coast based, a friend of Zoe Cadman's. That's how we came to know Dan, and he's been on with us. And he wrote the latest update as to what's going on with Victor Espinoza. And, you know, here we were, what, last weekend, we thought Victor was knocking on the door of coming back. And he worked out a horse in the morning and now has got a going back for a third opinion regarding his recovery. And Dan Ross not only discussed that, he also discussed the difficulties of the insurance front involved here with Victor and how the coverage has interrupted a couple different times, has interrupted his post-surgical rehab, physical therapy and such. So things that seemed like they were, you know, really on the doorstep of Victor coming back by the end of the month, a little more uncertain right now. If you didn't see that piece, I tweeted it out yesterday morning. Take a break here. Hour two at the races after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.